a perfect O. He was afraid her brows would knit together, her lips draw into a line.
A cloud shaped like a rabbit, Lucia said.
She giggled with delight. She was unpredictable. She had always been a bit impulsive, but now she complained. She felt fat or tired or too fuzzy and mushy like a rotten peach. He checked his temper, but it rattled his brain, caused him to tug at the hair on the back of his neck with his fingers, grind his teeth late at night. Side effects, she said. No, he said. It was the travel that made her tired. The long bus rides, the job, the noise and fumes of the city. Take a nap, he said. He sent Essie away to play with Freddy. She slept on the hammock outside. That night, like most nights, he listened to the sound of her brushing her teeth. And when it stopped, he hopped out of bed to spy on her in the kitchen, careful not to be seen. He waited until he saw the tap, the small round object falling into her hand, before he returned to bed, quickly pulling up the sheet. Each month or so he would root through the tall shelf, hunt among the spices to retrieve the small orange bottle. At first, he'd simply inspected it to see if she was running low, and then, when she was, he'd sweat for days over how to bring up the matter, as casually as possible. But it never went well, and soon afterward, he'd taken it upon himself to bring the bottle to the local farmacia, where he'd specifically requested they import this medication from Quito. But nonetheless, it was often unstocked, so he always felt victorious if he came out with it full. Back at the casita, he carefully dispensed one-third of the contents into an old tin he kept hidden in the bedroom, inside a storage trunk. The orange bottle never went empty, but was also never more than two-thirds filled. She knew, of course, but she didn't question him. In this way, they were like an old married couple, who preferred to pretend certain parts of themselves were invisible. But she was unpredictable. One evening she ran outside, grabbed a shovel from the garden, began to dig a hole. "Lucia, it's getting dark," he said. "So what?" she said. "I have eyes." Her tone flippant, loud, with a bitterness that frightened him. And he did not say the word, the one that rang in his mind, the one the sister had repeated over and over again, the one Lucia despised. Pills. "Are you all right?" he said. She kept digging, furiously hurling dirt. "Are you all right?" he repeated.
"I can take care of myself," she said.
She fell silent then, but he sensed a disdain, as if she knew he was hiding his fear. He bit the inside of his cheek. He would not let it go. This he had promised Lucia's sister before they left America, that he would never let this go. And though he did not owe the sister anything, he owed it to his daughter, he knew. "We don't have the same kinds of hospitals here," he said quietly. "You get sick here, I don't know how to help you. You get sick here, you stay local for the rest of your life." She stormed off into the woods. The next morning she left for Cuenca, and it crossed his mind. He never should have allowed her to take that job. But no, that was his tía's way of thinking, wasn't it? He knew Lucia, they didn't. He went to see Guadalupe. She wasn't home. The next day he tried Luna. Her mother was there. Eventually he found Fabiana, and when she screamed for Holy Jesus the Savior, he clamped a hand over her mouth, plunged harder and harder, and when she clawed her nails into his scalp, he focused on the pain. Then, by accident, he glimpsed his reflection in an oval hand mirror next to the bed, and for a split second, he thought he was looking at his daughter. He yanked on his jeans, returned quickly to the casita. They were in the kitchen, beating together butter, sugar, eggs, wearing their matching pink aprons.
"Poppy! We're making cookies," said Essie.
He peered into the bowl. Mmm, he said, yum, yum, tapping his belly. His daughter beamed. She looked so much like her mother. For Essie, he would try. For Essie. And then one day he'd gone to Cuenca to open a bank account, ducked into an internet cafe as it started to rain. By chance, he saw the girl in front of the vending machine, her reflection in the fluorescent white glare. She wore a denim jacket over a pink miniskirt, and when she moved, there was something familiar about the way her head and neck thrust ahead, the rest of her body in pursuit. Giraffe. Susie. The memories flooded in, imprinted upon him, the darkness of those days, inseparable from the chaos, the joy, the tender hysteria surrounding Esperanza's birth. Back when his baby's eyes rarely opened, and he was terrified he would drop her, or smother her, or crush her, or starve her, or that her nascent breath would simply stop. Only a handful of events, his infant brother Alomar's burial at sea, his departure from the campo, his arrival in America, were branded into his being in such visceral detail. And if he lay in the dark, he could hear it still. The skittering in the walls, the incessant clang of the radiators, low muffle of the television in the kitchen, tuned to Channel 9. Whenever the sirens wailed, he smelled smoke, but it was always his imagination. The bedroom temperature oscillated, hot and cold, hot and cold. A delicate film of ice coated the inner panes of the windows, and he'd scrape at it with his fingernails while the baby slept beside him, and Lucia floated two floors above. He tried to banish them from his thoughts. The baby, Lucia. Free himself for a minute or two, but the band of fear would stretch from his groin to his throat, a tension rod jammed in his chest. So he listened for the clip of Susie's footsteps. Let the sheets absorb the tang of sweat and sex and rancid deep-fry oil and plaster dust and rose-scented perfume. And he pulled her on top of him, and Susie would ride and ride until he exploded or until the baby woke and cried. No other lovemaking, before or after, ever came close to the rabid urgency of those nights. And then he and Susie would take turns bouncing Essie on the big green exercise ball that was not quite fully inflated, and with each bounce it sagged into the carpet with a hefty puff, as if bored by this repeated expulsion, and Susie would giggle, though he himself always worried the ball would burst under his weight. Such were the sharpened senses of those times, each day punctuated with shots of fear and doubt and adrenaline. On closer inspection, this girl was shorter, wider, paler, with thicker calves, but the exact same moon face and two small eyes, probably no older than 18. Susie, he said, even though he knew it was not Susie. The girl shook her head. Lo siento, he said. He unfurled a shy grin, continued to play the game. You look so much like someone I know. The girl angled her body away from him, skittish, like the squirrels he used to feed in New York. Susie Hernandez, he said. A flinch of recognition. Then she stared at him, and he thought she seemed a bit stupid. Or perhaps he had it all wrong. I know Susie from America, he said casually. We were friends in Nueva York. The girl blushed, startled, but her face brightened. I am Nelly, she said. Nelly Hernandez. Susie is my sister. The odds, the coincidence, he could hear Lucia say. His heart pounded. Power surged up his legs. I moved back a while ago. We haven't really kept in touch. She is well, I hope. The girl reddened. He noted a trace of dimple. If only she'd released that smile. Susie is in Esmeraldas now, she said softly.
Outside of the city.
Esmeraldas.
Yes, you know, in the north.
Esmeraldas, he repeated. In the north.
Outside the city.
The girl named the barrio.
How did she get there? How long has she lived there? What is she doing now?
She's fine, he said. The girl's two small eyes squinting. Bizarre how much she looked like Susie. Every feature the same, yet he found her overwhelmingly unattractive. Her skin had no sheen, her chin moved sideways like a cow chewing cud.
Yes, she said finally.
That's great. Esmeraldas, that's great.
He repeated it.
Qué bueno, qué bueno.
And now he was the stupid one. He should have asked for a phone number or an address or to convey a message. But what would he have said?
Qué bueno, qué bueno, he kept mumbling.
And then she'd turned away and run off like the squirrels. He couldn't remember if he'd told her his name.
He should tell Lucia. Of course she would want to know. She had been fond of Susie,
the little sister she'd never had, crushed to learn of her disappearance. But a part of him wanted this new information all for himself, as if this knowledge of Susie's whereabouts, kept secret, could be stowed alongside those other memories, prolong their intimacy somehow.
He would let it go. Susie had been found. She was safe in Esmeraldas.
There was no need to complicate things further. And then one day Lucia came to him. She had an idea, she said. She wanted to take a trip with Essie. She wanted to visit her sister in Switzerland. It caught him off guard. He couldn't recall the last time she'd mentioned her sister. The name, once popping up at regular intervals, had all but disappeared. Lucia asking permission, this surprised him too. If he said no, would she actually listen? But he couldn't think of any reason why she shouldn't go. And then, seeing how happy she was when he consented, he found it reasonable that she'd miss what little family she had. She went from withdrawn and moody to ecstatic, giddy, floating over the moon. She sang Hey Diddle Diddle the Cat and the Fiddle every night before bedtime. And that song about the bones, which Essie adored. They were going on a trip. They would fly high in the sky on an airplane. They would see snow. Snow! They would build snow forts and climb mountains and sit on the tippy top, drink hot chocolate with marshmallows and eat cheese with holes. It sounded silly, such promises, but when he said so, jokingly, she snapped at him. What would you know? She said. She was unpredictable. He was tense, unnerved. So one afternoon he found himself by the Telefono Cabinica in town, and he walked into a booth and called Lucia's sister in Switzerland. A whim. Because if he admitted he'd planned it, he would have been far too nervous. They had not spoken in years, not since he'd left America.
Hello, this is Manny.
She asked immediately,
Is something wrong?
No,
he said. He did not want to raise alarm. He told her about Lucia's job in Cuenca, of which Miranda was already aware, and about how happy Essie was at her school. There was no reply on the other end, and he was afraid the call had been disconnected, that Miranda Bach had been left hanging, annoyed. He was being evasive, he knew, and he knew she knew, and in the silence he sensed her apprehension.
Hello? Manny?
He exhaled.
Have you spoken with her much?
Not really, said Miranda. A few emails? What's going on?
Then he tried to reassure her, but by the very fact that he was calling, it was impossible to sound convincing. He reassured himself instead.
She's excited to visit you in Switzerland, and Essie too. Before, I was worried. She seemed sad, not saying much, that's all.
The line cracked with static, but he continued to talk.
It will be good for her, some time away, a vacation with you and Essie. It'll be nice for her to relax.
Relajarse. It was not a word often spoken in these parts, but it was a word emphasized by that social worker in that hospital.
It's hard, all the travel back and forth to the city every week. I worry it's not good for her.
More crackling on the line, like nerves buzzing.
Is she taking her pills?
This was essentially the only question that mattered in their conversations. At times, he felt its answer was more important to Miranda Buck than her sister's actual well-being.
Yes, he said. I think so.
Though now he couldn't be sure. Certainly not on the night she stayed in the city. How did he know what she did then? And even in the kitchen of their casita, in front of the sink, he never spied long enough to see the pills go down her throat. He grew panicked. But no, her behavior was not anything like after Essie had been born. She had been crazy, crazy loco then. She was not like that. She was different, but not like that. And then, as if she sensed his confusion,
"Are you sure?"
"I think so, but I'm not sure."
He felt a rush of relief to share this burden with her. He had never told anyone about Lucia's illness, not even Mommy.
"If she's not right, you can tell."
He nodded into the phone, but he wasn't sure, and he felt stupid, as he often did, speaking to Lucia's sister. Only later, much later, would he understand. Later, in hindsight, they would come together on this, to wonder when it had become impossible to distinguish which parts of Lucia fell under her own jurisdiction and which belonged to her illness.
"Is she seeing a doctor?"
"In the city, maybe. She doesn't like to talk about it."
"If she isn't right, she needs to see a doctor. Do you have psychiatrists there?"
He felt suddenly heavy, tired. He set down the phone quickly. He wished he had not made the call. It stirred up worry, that was all. He tried not to think about the conversation as he walked through town. He bought soup bones from the carnicero, a bag of candy corn. Lucia would be leaving soon. They would have a break. It would be good for him. He could call on Fabiana or Luna or Guadalupe, or see if a couple of his primos would be interested in taking a trip. He'd enjoy a couple of days on the beach. They could hit the bars and discos, go fishing, check out the tourists on the Malecón. He enjoyed losing himself in all he might do, all the freedoms a man might take while his wife and child were away. Though they were never officially married, and this bothered no one but Mommy, it no longer occurred to him to have that conversation. Or, he thought suddenly, he could try to find Susie in Esmeraldas. Susie Hernandez, who had disappeared one day from the Vargas house, that cold, rainy afternoon he could still see so clearly in his mind. The sleet, the ice, the traffic on Main Street, the policeman shining a flashlight in his eyes. And then Mrs. Gutierrez waving her broom, dressed in robe and sunglasses as she called from her stoop, "Susie! Taken by migras!" Following the news, he had lived in a stupor for days, maybe weeks. It dawned on him. Susie had been his sole ally. She had shared his burden, knowing the truth. And one night the sirens screamed down the street, and without thinking, he grabbed Esperanza and ran out into the cold. His legs carried him to Main Street, past the familiar shops and restaurants, until he found himself sitting on the steps of the town's police station. He knew only that he was cold and tired, and that he was sick of being so cold and tired and afraid all the time. And he wanted it to end. So he'd risen to his feet,
reached for the metal door handle with his near-frozen hand. And that's when Susie's phone, which he'd carried in his pocket every day since she'd disappeared, had buzzed. As if on cue. Lucia's sister.
Lucia is still in the hospital, she said. I'd like to come by to speak with you.
He'd hunched back down on those icy steps, head hot and spinning, baby strapped to his chest. It had been weeks since the sister had promised to call him with news. He'd assumed Lucia was gone. Like the Mexicano, Jimmy Prieto. Like Susie. Disappeared from his life. Because what else could he have thought back then? He had been to America, but he had never been to the city of Esmeraldas, a mere 600 kilometers to the north. It had a rough reputation. Colombian drug rings, brothels, though it was also home to several of the national footballers. At first it seemed a crazy idea, but then he found a bus schedule, planned an itinerary. The early morning bus to Quito, a night with an old schoolmate, then out to Esmeraldas the next morning. Though how would he find her? By navigating his way to the barrio? Calling her name in the streets? Still, he was curious. And colored by an elusive nostalgia, he fantasized a life with Susie the way he'd once fantasized a life with Lucia. With half a dozen children and hot meals around a large table. But Lucia was woven into his reality now. And it struck him that even if he wanted to leave, the casita, his tías, the eternal blue-gray sky, there was no place for him to go. It would be good to have a break. But Lucia didn't end up going to Switzerland. 3 days before she was scheduled to leave, she called from Cuenca, left a message at the main house with Mami. The casita still had no phone. "What do you mean she's not coming back today?" he asked. "That's what she said," said Mami. She sat on her low stool peeling potatoes. "Why?" "I don't know, hijo," said Mami. "She didn't say." "What did she say?" "Only that she was delayed in Cuenca. Had some things to do." "Did she sound all right?"
Mummy looked at him from her low stool.
"I don't know, hijo. She didn't say much." "Why? Is something wrong?"
"That one," said Tia Camila. "Going here, going there, never standing still. That kind of woman is never right."
She fanned her face with a dish towel. Tia Camila did not pretend to like Lucia. She didn't see the point. Mami stood, set out a slice of honey cake and motioned for him to eat. She wrapped her arms around his shoulders, kissed him on top of his head as she had done when he was a child.
"Hijo, you are a good man," she said. "I am glad that you are home."
3 days later, Lucia came trudging up the winding dirt path, muddy from the rains. He was drinking a beer on the front stoop. He hadn't expected her. It was dark, already night.
"I'm not going," she said,
deep moons under her eyes.
"What do you mean you're not going?"
"Not going to Switzerland."
"Why not?" he said.
"It's complicated."
Her voice tight and strange.
"What happened?"
"You wouldn't understand. I don't want to go anymore. I don't want to talk about it."
She went inside, slipped into bed. He was baffled, bewildered, disappointed, relieved. A short while later, he went to check on her. She was already asleep. Both arms wrapped around Essie, the two of them one big ball curled up tight. The next day it occurred to him. He had not brought the orange bottle on the high shelf to the farmacia in a while. It must be running low. He rummaged through the spices. It was there behind the paprika. Lucia must have gone to the pharmacy herself, because it was all the way full. On Monday morning, she asked him to drive her to town, where she boarded the chicken bus to the city as usual. But she returned that same evening, wheeling her large red plaid suitcase behind her.
"Mama!"
said Essie. She leapt into her mother's arms, begged to ride on the suitcase as though it were some exotic horse.
"I'm back,"
she said.
"What's up?"
he said. She would no longer stay in the apartment in Cuenca.
"Why not?"
he asked, genuinely surprised. She said,
"It's full of spiders."
She seemed different, but not in that erratic way she had been for months. This was something more fragile, more volatile. He found the best strategy was to feign light-hearted approval.
"Is that a new dress? I haven't seen it before. Have you noticed your fava beans growing?"
On eggshells, he checked his words. She ignored him, mostly, though she lavished attention on their daughter, playing blocks or stuffed bunny tea party or pirate ship adventures. But before bed each night when Essie called,
"Mama, come! Mama, read a book!"
Lucia walked away, as if she did not hear, and when Essie ran to tug at her arm, she looked through her daughter as though she were not there. She worked in their garden, digging and weeding and sowing and pruning, always on her knees, looking down. Mommy noticed the change. Mommy rarely came to the casita, but one day he saw her walk up the path, woolen shawl drawn around her shoulders.
"Essie is in school," he said. "This is for Lucia," said Mommy.
She had brought a pot of locro de papa, potato soup. She set it down, joined them on the stoop.
"Lucita, is something bothering you?"
Lucia stared up at the sky, pointed at the clouds changing shape.
"They're whispering about me all the time," she said.
She sounded so far away. Mommy kissed her cheek gently, reached for her hand. Lucia sat, her gaze still fixed on the clouds.
"Ma?" she said.
He walked away. He went to Fabiana that afternoon. It was true, they whispered. At Tia Camila's birthday party, at Cousin Estela's quince, on Dia de los Difuntos and New Year's Eve, at baby Alberto's christening. They had always whispered.
"What kind of woman leaves her husband and child? She goes to Cuenca, alone." "Why Cuenca?" "In America, the women do it." "America, but this is not America."
Tia Camila, Tia Alba, Tia Paula, the neighbor Roberto, his cousins on the football fields, Tio Remy, who asked after Lucia's health as he winked and nudged.
"The Chinitas have the softest hands."
Even Ricky and Juan asked,
"Manny, what's up with Lucia?"
"She's been tired," he said. At least this was the truth. Some days she was up at the crack of dawn, frying eggs, making pancakes. Some days she slept all afternoon. Some days she picked up Essie early from school. One morning they left the campo but did not go to school at all, and when he came home mid-morning he found them outside, sailing paper boats down a trench they'd dug with Essie's toy shovels and filled with the hose.
"Shouldn't she be at school?" he asked.
"What?"
"School," he said.
"Oh, Manny," she said breezily. "School is so silly. This is Mommy Essie time. We're bonding."
He swallowed. He knew he should say something, assert himself, admonish her, but the vacancy in her eyes made him cower. One day he came home to find the bright yellow pot unattended on the stove, sizzling, boiling over, lapped by orange-blue flames, Lucia, he called. Lucia! Angry. He found them in the bedroom, on the floor, playing My Little Pony. Lucia on her knees, Essie with a brand new butterfly barrette in her hair. Please, you need to be more careful, he said. You could have burned a whole house down.
But Manny, you wouldn't let that happen. See? You came.
Lucia, this behavior, it's dangerous. He gritted his teeth, lowered his voice. I'm worried.
Worried, worried, Manny's worried.
He did not use the word, sick. She hated that word. You don't seem well.
How would you know? Are you inside my body?
Are you? I'm fine.
It's none of your business.
Her clavicles tensed. I'm just asking.
Stop asking.
Maybe we should go to the doctor.
We? No, she shouted. You go to the doctor. Leave me alone.
He took his daughter outside. He felt clammy, hot and cold.
Why is Mama so mad? Said Essie.
Go to Abuela, he said. Go on, mi amor. Go stay at the house. He began to spend his nights on the hammock outside. One night he dreamed of a woman with Fabiana's face, Luna's legs, Guadalupe's stubbly pepa. But when he rode her, he was riding Susie's heart-shaped ass. Dawn brought a sore back, sore jaw, a crick in his neck, skin riddled with fresh mosquito bites. One evening he came home later than usual, found the screen door wide open, the house dark and empty. He figured they were at Mommy's watching TV or playing cards, but Mommy's house was quiet too.
What is it, hijo? She said.
Nothing, he mumbled. He plodded back home. The motorbike was still there. They could not have gone far. He checked the garden, the shed, the groves behind the casita. Down by the river he saw their clothes laid out in the grass to dry, his t-shirts and jeans, Lucia's bras, Essie's sundresses, and Dora the Explorer underwear. Lucia! He called. The only sounds, the gurgling water, the crickets, the bark of a dog. The sunlight was fading, the water dark. For a moment he panicked, envisioning the worst. Essie! Lucia! He kicked off his boots, waded in, the mud sludgy, warm, squishy between his toes, small fish nipping at his ankles. Shit, he said. He was being ridiculous. Wasn't he? They could be at Tia Paula's, the neighbors, anywhere. He sprinted back to the casita. Lucia! Essie! Finally, he heard a whimper from the direction of their bright purple outhouse. He ran to it, yanked at the door, the flimsy hook flying into the grass. They were there. The two of them, squatted on top of the toilet seat, his daughter's eyes clenched shut, pinching her nose with her fingers.
Essie! Poppy!
Her eyes sprang open. Her lips quivered.
We were hiding from the spies, she said.
She began to cry. She threw her skinny arms around his neck.
Poppy, Poppy, I was scared. Please don't let them find us, Poppy.
She clung to him with gasping sobs, her entire body shaking uncontrollably.
Yeah, I'm here now. I'm here.
He kissed her wet cheeks, smoothed her hair.
Yeah, it's okay. You don't have to be scared.
But his chest filled with rage. He glared at Lucia.
Are you crazy? He hissed.
What? She said. We were playing a game. Essie, come on, silly. It was just a game.
He wanted to hit her, slap her, smash that ridiculous smirk off her vile face.
Don't you ever dare do this again, he said.
He carried his daughter back to the casita, lay beside her as she slept in their bed. Lucia did not come in. He did not see her the next morning, either. He didn't care. He brought Essie to school. "Abuela will come pick you up today," he said. The rest of the morning was spent lugging heavy hoses up the hillside. Around lunchtime he stopped at Mami's, drenched in sweat. Tia Camila sat on the low stool, peeling potatoes. "Where is Mami?" he asked.
"She is not here," his tia answered.
"Where is she?"
Tia Camila set down the peeler, stood, washed her hands in the sink.
"Your papi took Silvia to the doctor."
"The doctor?
Si?
Why?"
"Ay, sobrino."
His tia vented a lofty sigh.
"Your mother is worrying about you all the time. Worrying about your chinita, worrying about your child. Worrying so much she makes herself sick."
"Mami, sick." It sent his gut roiling, lit a fire from his chest to his face. But Mami was strong like an ox. He could not recall her ever being sick. She rarely even went to the doctor. Tia Camila shook her head.
"You don't know what it's like for a mother to see her own son this way. A man who cannot control his own wife. Ay, que vergüenza."
Disgrace. He blistered with humiliation. Boiled all day. Dug holes, flung dirt, pounded wooden posts with a sledgehammer. His throat was dry. His tongue stuck to the roof of his mouth. He felt dizzy and had to sit down. That evening he returned to the casita, exhausted. Lucia was there, wearing her pink apron, standing in front of the stove, the yellow enamel pot once again at full boil. Every surface of their kitchen was covered in vegetables. Zucchini, eggplants, yuca, radishes, cabbage, beets, carrots, potatoes, all diced into 1-inch cubes, laid out in colorful matrices of varying sizes, 6x8, 4x12, 24x2.
"What the fuck are you doing?"
he said. She turned to him.
"What does it look like?" she said. "I'm cooking. What are you doing?"
He punched the wall with his fist. Pain shot through his arm. The gold-framed picture of Jesus Christ clattered to the floor.
"Basta," he said. "Enough of this shit. You're sick. You're crazy. You need to take your pills. I need to call your sister."
"What?"
"I'm going to call your sister."
"My sister?" said Lucia.
She grabbed the bright yellow pot full of boiling water, hurled it at his face. Chapter 7. Miranda. "It missed," he said, but only because he jumped out of the way. "It was full of boiling water," he said. It crashed by his feet, scalded his left ankle, made mud where the water pooled on the floor.
"Jesus Christ, are you hurt?" said Miranda.
She nearly dropped her phone.
"She's angry, scared. She's lashing out."
"Angry about what?"
said Manny. Stefan lay reading a book in bed, so she slipped out to the back porch. She stood by her wicker rocking chair, but did not sit down.
"Everything," she said.
"But I'm trying to help her," he said.
His voice sounded clear, as though he were somewhere close, in the starry night, in the blackness of the Stadttalersee, in the looming silhouettes of the Alps.
"I know," she said. "I'm sorry."
What else could she say? And when he'd returned, several hours later, he found Lucia sitting alone. All the vegetables were gone. The floor was clean. Her eyes glittered. and when she stood, he braced himself, ready to run, noted the cleaver in the drying rack. But then she walked to the stove.
"Are you hungry?"
she said.
As if nothing had happened, she handed me a bowl of soup.
"Oh, God, Manny. Oh, God. Oh, God."
Her brain in high gear, trying to fathom the progression of Lucia's thoughts.
"I'm scared," he said. "For Essie. For me. I don't know what to do. I can't talk to her. I can't control her. One minute she won't speak, the next minute she's screaming and throwing things. She's like a monster. It's really bad."
"Does she have the pills?" she asked.
"I think so."
"Is she taking them?"
"I don't know."
"She needs to take them."
"But I can't make her. Here, there are no police, no hospitals, no emergency rooms. It's not like America. Please, Miranda, come help."
She heard his desperation, his fear. But she could not bring herself to tell him the truth, that she'd already been to Ecuador. 6 weeks ago, she'd gone to try to make things right. That night in Cuenca, Lucia was a complete disaster. Disheveled, agitated, she argued to herself, banging around in that tiny room. "The spider," she repeated again and again.
"What spider, Lucia? What are you doing, Lucia?"
But all Lucia could say was,
"I don't know. I don't know."
And her reply was, "Lucia, he's her father. You can't do this."
"You're sick," she'd said.
Yet Lucia refused to admit she'd stopped taking her pills.
"You're lying,"
she'd said.
Though some small part of her worried she was wrong, because she was not sure. Was it the illness?
Some decree from the serpents? Or could Lucia have spun herself into such a frenzy from the sheer force of her guilt? Doubts like these had never seized Miranda before. And then, her worst fear, that the line between her sister and the illness was becoming irrevocably blurred.
"Lucia, take these now."
She'd tried to stay calm, held out four of the small white pills. Four. A therapeutic dose when symptoms became acute.
"Fuck you! Lucia, come on. I hate you. You're not my master. Stop it. You stop it. Lucia, please. You take them."
And then Lucia had lunged forward, snatched the medicine from her hand, swung at her wildly, and Miranda had fallen back against a wall.
"You're sick. You take them. You see how it is."
Those maniacal eyes, the outstretched hand, clamped on Miranda's face and then covering her mouth, and the bitter chemical taste spread across her tongue. And though she did not believe in God, she cursed him now. She spat at him. She spat and spat as she scrubbed at her tongue with her wrist.
"Why her? Why her, God? Why her? Why not me?"
Every ounce of Miranda's being shook. Her hands, her heart, her voice, her will. There was only one thing left she could think to say.
"Lucia, take these. Take these now, or I swear I will tell Manny what you've tried to do."
And Lucia, at last, had downed the pills in a desolate fury, flung the bottle out the open window. Tick-tack. Then she flung open her ugly plaid suitcase, hurled its contents across the room. A shoe, a hair dryer, an antique brass lamp. It struck Miranda on the forehead. In the aftermath of that brawl had come a tense, bitter silence, like a steel cage, her sister locked inside.
"Let's go to the park. Let's get something to eat. How about you show me your favorite bakery, Lucia?"
The next afternoon they'd finally walked to the pharmacy, procured a refill. And then Lucia had turned to her and issued her proclamation. Are you satisfied? Now get out. Just get out of my fucking life.
She won't even go to Cuenca, said Manny. She wasn't like this before. She was happy, excited, looking forward to taking Essie to Switzerland. I don't understand what happened.
He didn't know. He still didn't know. She wanted to break down then, to tell him everything, expose her sister's lies, reveal Lucia's intentions to run off with their child, but truly, she did not know what he would do if he knew. Fly into a rage? Kick Lucia out? Forbid her from ever seeing her daughter again? To tell him the truth would poison whatever relationship he and Lucia had, and then what would happen to Lucia?
Manny, she won't listen to me. I want to help, but I can't control her any more than you can. I can't make her do anything.
This was the truth, one he could not seem to hear.
Please, he said. I beg of you, please come take her. Please, Miranda, help.
She sat in the wicker rocker on her back porch, tapped furiously on her laptop, no longer noticing the clock tower in town with its copper-green cupola, or the cows dotting the hillside, or the Stocktaler See, or the snowy peaks of Glarnish in the distance. She tracked down phone numbers, emails, names, and more names, spoke in broken Spanish to clerks at the immigration office in Ecuador, found a French psychologist in Cuenca and explained the situation in broken French. But the closest psychiatric hospital was almost 4 hours away. She called the American embassy in Quito.
Huh?
They said. No, they could not evict an American citizen with proper papers. Not unless she was a criminal. Sunday morning she feigned a headache. Unfathomable, to face another fondue dinner with her in-laws.
Miranda, please, said Stefan.
She knew it pained him, having to make excuses for her.
You didn't come last week. It might help take your mind off things.
It was true she had missed last Sunday's dinner, and the one before, too. And by late afternoon she'd relented, picturing the sincere look of disappointment on Grossmutti's face. She downed 2 Panadol, baked a strawberry tart, and when Grossmutti exclaimed,
"Oh, how delicious!"
it eased her guilt.
"And Raphael, is my great-grandson coming today?"
And Miranda watched Stefan's gaze veer to his hands, his lower jaw protrude. "I'm sorry, he has a project to finish." And this pained her too. She commented on the weather, the cheeses, the lovely new Marimekko place settings with the floral prints.
"The swine is delicious,"
said the sister with the pretty twin daughters.
"From Lavaux?"
said the brother with the petite French wife.
"We were in Geneva last weekend, decided to take a detour. Have you been, Miranda?"
"What?"
"The train des vignes is spectacular, from Vevilly to Puydeau, through the vineyards."
She nodded, the words trailing through her ears.
"You should take her, Stefan,"
said the petite French wife.
"The gardens are breathtaking."
"Yes,"
said her husband.
"We could use a trip."
Glancing around the table at the assortment of fair faces, harmless as vegetables, she felt like an alien. She longed for some loud, wacky aunt, some unemployed alcoholic uncle, some hint of tarnish in their normalcy that might legitimize her own strife.
"Are you all right, dear?"
asked Grossmutti, her blue eyes warm.
"Oh, yes,"
she smiled.
"The wine is excellent. I'd love another glass."
She woke at 1, at 2, at 4 in the morning, her body buzzing like millions of microscopic bees lived in her blood. She lay awake, stomach curdled, fists tight, tornadoes of thoughts spinning wildly in her head. Anxiety, the doctor had said. Manifestations of stress. Her nights had been fitful these past few months, since before that trip to Ecuador. She needed sleep. Sleep was of critical importance to the brain's proper functioning. The doctor said that, too. She tried relaxation techniques. Imagined sheep, counted backward from 100, chanted 60 ohms.
She was happy, excited.
She climbed out of bed, went to the kitchen, downed a double dose of Ativan. A week passed, and she had not heard from him.
"Should I go?" she asked.
She asked Stefan. No one else knew. He stared at her in disbelief.
"You were just there," he said.
"But this time..."
"What would you do? Drag her, kicking and screaming? She's a grown woman."
"But he needs help."
"Then he can take her to a hospital."
"How can he do that? They live in the middle of nowhere."
She imagined it, dragging Lucia by the hair. She remembered the shoes, the hairdryer, the antique brass lamp flying through the air.
"He's a grown-up, Miranda. And your sister is, too."
That dispassionate face. She could slap it.
Suddenly, he seemed a stranger, occupying her bed.
"She has an illness, for God's sake. It's not her fault, Stefan. It's not his fault either. Please, have some compassion. You're a doctor, after all. My sister has an illness of the brain."
She could see him fizzing inside, resenting the accusation. "This isn't about me," he said. "Don't take this out on me. Besides, where would you bring her? Here?" No, not Switzerland. Mental health laws in Switzerland were as foreign to her as in Ecuador.
"New York, maybe?"
"Do you really think you can drag her onto an airplane with you to New York, to go to a mental hospital?"
The edge in his tone fully realized, and now he no longer bothered to hide his exasperation.
"You could at least try to be helpful," she said,
rankled, up for a fight.
"Schatzli, please don't make this about me. I told you. Tell him to get her to a doctor."
"But she's angry with me. Her aggression, the rages, those are meant for me."
"Stop it. Miranda, it's enough."
Stefan rarely raised his voice, but he raised it now. And later, much later, when she could view this part of their lives through her husband's lens, Miranda would invariably cringe. Because this is what he knew. That the hospitals, Ecuador, these episodes destroyed her every time. That she would not eat or sleep. That the stomach pains would wake her at all hours of the night. That she would become angry, irritable, and any opinion he offered, regardless of how gentle or solicitous, would be wrong. Dismissed. And she would snap or yell or burst into tears, and they would say things they each regretted later. That gash on her forehead. She didn't think he knew, but he did. He was not unsympathetic to the others. But in Stefan's reality, there was only one person whose well-being stood at stake. His wife. Miranda, who was good. Miranda, who tried so hard to do what was right. And if this put her in opposition to him, he hated it. Yes, he was selfish too. Her turmoil was his. Her unhappiness, his anguish. No, he could not tell her to go to Ecuador now. But he also could not demand that she stay. It tore him up that he loved her. He tried so hard to love her. Yet how best to love her still eluded him. "You can't keep doing this to yourself," he said.
"This isn't about me, Stefan. It's about her.
but it is about you. Don't you understand? She's crazy. She's hurting people. She's causing them pain. And you want me to sit here and do nothing?
But you can't help her, he said. His tone returned to an alarming calm.
I can try.
You have tried. You've been trying all these years. Her eyes filled with tears. I love you, Miranda. Don't you understand? I love you.
She jerked away, bristling. This is me, Stefan.
What about your life, Miranda?
But she refused to back down.
He loved her.
Did he?
If so, the pronouncement only amplified her anger now.
This is not helpful, Stefan.
She threw on a robe, stormed out to the kitchen. He sat in their bed, his pulse too fast. She waited, shivering, slumped in her chair. He did not go to her.
Besides, she was busy. Too busy. She was chairing a fundraising campaign at the hospital, presenting to the board next week. And the other morning, she'd been in the middle of a meeting, had to excuse herself, suffered her first full-blown panic attack in the ladies' room.
No, she could not go.
Another 3 days passed. She dreamed she was on an airplane, falling. Her teeth fell out, clicked around in her mouth. She was 13 years old, beating an injured bird to its death with a baseball bat. If it died, she would no longer have to care.
Stefan was right. What more could she do for Lucia?
But for Manny, for Esperanza.
But the bees buzzed in her blood.
If you need anything, I can help. I promise.
I have to, Stefan. They were eating dinner, lentil loaf with steamed broccoli. Raphael was playing video games in his bedroom.
The awards banquet is on Saturday.
Her husband was being honored for his work with the community outreach program at the hospital.
I know. I'm sorry.
I'd really like it if you came. His tone chilly, hesitant, as if he'd had to give himself permission to ask.
I want to come. You know I do.
And there's Sophie's communion. His niece, whom she'd tutored in English up until last year when Sophie's extracurriculars became too overwhelming. Miranda exhaled slowly.
Come on, Stefan.
It's an important family event.
I'm aware of that. But Sophie is a child, and I can't take a guilt trip right now. Please.
A guilt trip, Miranda?
When have I ever stopped you from doing anything you wanted to do?
No, not the first time she went to Ecuador, when he thought she was meddling and he'd expressed his concern as diplomatically as he could, and she'd stormed out of that fancy French restaurant in the middle of dinner. But he did not sound angry now. Only cold, wounded.
You're sure you want to do this? After last time?
I'm not sure. Do you think I want to go?
This was not the right question, they knew.
Do you want me to tell you to go?
Okay, go.
Stefan.
Sophie looks up to you, Miranda. You're important to her, and she's important to me. She's my sister's daughter.
And who the fuck is that child in Ecuador?
Miranda exploded. Rocketed off her chair, threw open the front door. Stefan realized too late the offense of his words. She was gone before he could apologize.
Manny, it's Miranda.
Her hands were sweating. She wiped them on her skirt.
I've booked a flight. How is everything?
She held her breath, suspended the phone several inches away from her ear, as if this would soften the impact of the blow.